absolute shatter point of the Sith. The shatter point of the dark side itself. Mace thought, blankly astonished. Palpatine trusts Anakin Skywalker. Now Anakin was at Mace's shoulder. Palpatine still made no move to defend himself from Skywalker. Instead, he ramped up the lightning bursting from his hands, bending the fountain of Mace's blade back toward the Corran Master's face. Palpatine's eyes glowed with power, casting a yellow glare that burned back the rain from around them. He is a traitor, Anakin. Destroy him. You're the chosen one, Anakin, Mace said, his voice going thin with strain. This was beyond Vapad. He had no strength left to fight against his own blade. Take him. It's your destiny. Skywalker echoed him faintly. Destiny.
Help me. I can't hold on any longer.
The yellow glare from Palpatine's eyes spread outward through his flesh. His skin flowed like oil, as though the muscle beneath was burning away, as though even the bones of his skull were softening, were bending and bulging, deforming from the heat and pressure of his electric hatred.
He is killing me, Anakin. Please, Anna!
Mace's blade bent so close to his face that he was choking on ozone.
Anakin, he's too strong for me.
Palpatine's roar above the endless blast of lightning became a fading moan of despair. The lightning swallowed itself, leaving only the night and the rain and an old man crumpled to his knees on a slippery ledge.
I can't. I give up. I am too weak in the end. Too old and too weak. Don't kill me, Master Jedi, please. I surrender.
Victory flooded through Mace's aching body. He lifted his blade.
You Sith disease.
Wait!
Skywalker seized his lightsaber arm with desperate strength.
Don't kill him! You can't just kill him, Master!
Yes, I can. Mace said, grim and certain. I have to.
You came to arrest him. He has to stand trial.
A trial would be a joke. He controls the courts. He controls the Senate.
So are you going to kill all them, too? Like he said you would?
Mace yanked his arm free. He's too dangerous to be left alive. If you could have taken Dooku alive, would you have?
Skywalker's face swept itself clean of emotion. That was different. Mace turned toward the cringing, beaten Sith Lord.
You can explain the difference after he's dead.
He raised his lightsaber.
I need him alive!
Skywalker shouted.
I need him to save Padme!
Mace thought blankly, why? And moved his lightsaber toward the fallen Chancellor. Before he could follow through on his stroke, a sudden arc of blue plasma sheared through his wrist, and his hand tumbled away with his lightsaber still in it. And Palpatine roared back to his feet, and lightning speared from the Sith Lord's hands, and without his blade to catch it, the power of Palpatine's hate struck him full on. He had been so intent on Palpatine's shatterpoint that he'd never thought to look for Anakin's. Dark lightning blasted away his universe. He fell forever. Anakin Skywalker knelt in the rain. He was looking at a hand. The hand had brown skin. The hand held a lightsaber. The hand had a charred oval of tissue where it should have been attached to an arm. What have I done? Was it his voice? It must have been, because it was his question. What have I done? Another hand, a warm and human hand, laid itself softly on his shoulder.
You're following your destiny, Anakin, said a familiar, gentle voice. The Jedi are traitors. You saved the Republic from their treachery. You can see that, can't you?
You were right, Anakin heard himself saying. Why didn't I know?
You couldn't have. They cloaked themselves in deception, my boy. Because they feared your power, they could never trust you. Anakin stared at the hand, but he no longer saw it. Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan trusts me. Not enough to tell you of their plot. Treason echoed in his memory. This is not an assignment for the record. That warm and human hand gave his shoulder a warm and human squeeze. I do not fear your power, Anakin. I embrace it. You are the greatest of the Jedi. You can be the greatest of the Sith. I believe that, Anakin. I believe in you. I trust you. I trust you. I trust you. Anakin looked from the dead hand on the ledge to the living one on his shoulder, then up to the face of the man who stood above him, and what he saw there choked him like an invisible fist crushing his throat. The hand on his shoulder was human. The face wasn't. The eyes were a cold and feral yellow, and they gleamed like those of a predator lurking beyond a fringe of firelight. The bone around those feral eyes had swollen and melted and flowed like durasteel spilled from a fusion smelter, and the flesh that blanketed it had gone corpse gray and coarse as rotten synthplast. Stunned with horror, stunned with revulsion, Anakin could only stare at the creature, at the shadow. Looking into the face of the darkness, he saw his future. "Now come inside," the darkness said. After a moment, he did. Anakin stood just within the office, motionless. Palpatine examined the damage to his face in a broad expanse of wall mirror. Anakin couldn't tell if his expression might be revulsion, or if this were merely the new shape of his features. Palpatine lifted one tentative hand to the misshapen horror that he now saw in the mirror, then simply shrugged.
"And so the mask becomes the man," he sighed, with a hint of philosophical melancholy. "I shall miss the face of Palpatine, I think. But for our purpose, the face of Sidious will serve. Yes, it will serve."
He gestured, and a hidden compartment opened in the office's ceiling above his desk. A voluminous robe of heavy black-on-black brocade floated downward from it. Anakin felt the current in the Force that carried the robe to Palpatine's hand. He remembered playing a Force game with a Sha'ura fruit, sitting across a long table from Padme in the retreat by the lake on Naboo. He remembered telling her how grumpy Obi-Wan would be to see him use the Force so casually. Palpatine seemed to catch his thought. He gave a yellow sidelong glance as the robe settled onto his shoulders.
"You must learn to cast off the petty restraints that the Jedi have tried to place upon your power," he said. "Anakin, it's time. I need you to help me restore order to the galaxy."
Anakin didn't respond. Sidious said,
"Join me. Pledge yourself to the Sith. Become my apprentice."
A wave of tingling started at the base of Anakin's skull and spread over his whole body in a slow-motion shockwave.
I can't."
"Of course you can."
Anakin shook his head and found that the rest of him threatened to begin shaking as well.
"I came to save your life, sir. Not to betray my friends."
Sidious snorted.
"What friends?"
Anakin could find no answer.
"And do you think that task is finished, my boy?"
Sidious seated himself on the corner of the desk, hands folded in his lap, the way he always had when offering Anakin fatherly advice. The misshapen mask of his face made the familiarity of his posture into something horrible.
"Do you think that killing one traitor will end treason? Do you think the Jedi will ever stop until I am dead?"
Anakin stared at his hands. The left one was shaking. He hid it behind him.
"It's them or me, Anakin. Or perhaps I should put it more plainly. It's them or Padme."
Anakin made his right hand, his black-gloved hand of Durasteel and electrodrivers, into a fist. It's not easy, that's all. I've been a Jedi for so long. Sidious offered an appalling smile.
There is a place within you, my boy. A place as briskly clean as ice on a mountaintop, cool and remote. Find that high place and look down within yourself. Breathe that clean, icy air as you regard your guilt and shame. Do not deny them. Observe them. Take your horror in your hands and look at it. Examine it as a phenomenon. Smell it. Taste it. Come to know it as only you can, for it is yours, and it is precious.
As the shadow beside him spoke, its words became true. From a remote, frozen distance that was at the same time more extravagantly, hotly intimate than he could have ever dreamed, Anakin handled his emotions. He dissected them. He reassembled them and pulled them apart again. He still felt them. If anything, they burned hotter than before, but they no longer had the power to cloud his mind.
You have found it, my boy. I can feel you there. That cold distance, that mountaintop within yourself, that is the first key to the power of the Sith.
Anakin opened his eyes and turned his gaze fully upon the grotesque features of Darth Sidious. He didn't even blink. As he looked upon that mask of corruption, the revulsion he felt was real, and it was powerful, and it was interesting. Anakin lifted his hand of Durasteel and electrodrivers and cupped it, staring into its palm as though he held there the fear that had haunted his dreams for his whole life, and it was no larger than the piece of Shaura he'd once stolen from Padme's plate. On the mountain peak within himself, he weighed Padme's life against the Jedi Order. It was no contest. He said,
"Yes." "Yes to what, my boy?"
"Yes. I want your knowledge."
"Good. Good."
"I want your power. I want the power to stop death."
"That power only my master truly achieved, but together we will find it. The Force is strong with you, my boy. You can do anything."
"The Jedi betrayed you," Anakin said. "The Jedi betrayed both of us."
"As you say. Are you ready?"
"I am," he said, and meant it. "I give myself to you. I pledge myself to the ways of the Sith. Take me as your apprentice. Teach me. Lead me. Be my master." Sidious raised the hood of his robe and draped it to shadow the ruin of his face.
"Kneel before me, Anakin Skywalker."
Anakin dropped to one knee. He lowered his head.
"It is your will to join your destiny forever with the Order of the Sith Lords?"
There was no hesitation. "Yes." Darth Sidious laid a pale hand on Anakin's brow.
"Then it is done. You are now one with the Order of the Dark Lords of the Sith. From this day forward, the truth of you, my apprentice, now and forevermore, will be Darth."
A pause. A questioning in the Force. An answer. Dark as the gap between galaxies. He heard Sidious say it. His new name. Vader. A pair of syllables that meant him. Vader, he said to himself. Vader. "Thank you, my master."
"Every single Jedi, including your friend Obi-Wan Kenobi, have been revealed as enemies of the Republic now. You understand that, don't you?"
"Yes, my master."
"The Jedi are relentless. If they are not destroyed to the last being, there will be civil war without end. To sterilize the Jedi Temple will be your first task. Do what must be done, Lord Vader.
I always have, my master.
Do not hesitate. Show no mercy. Leave no living creature behind. Only then will you be strong enough with the dark side to save Padme.
What of the other Jedi?
Leave them to me. After you have finished at the temple, your second task will be the Separatist leadership in their secret bunker on Mustafar. When you have killed them all, the Sith will rule the galaxy once more, and we shall have peace forever. Rise, Darth Vader.
The Sith Lord, who once had been a Jedi hero called Anakin Skywalker, stood, drawing himself up to his full height. But he looked not outward upon his new master, nor upon the planet city beyond, nor out into the galaxy that they would soon rule. He instead turned his gaze inward. He unlocked the furnace gate within his heart and stepped forth to regard with new eyes the cold, freezing dread of the Dead Star dragon that had haunted his life.
I am Darth Vader, he said within himself.
The dragon tried again to whisper of failure and weakness and inevitable death, but with one hand the Sith Lord caught it, crushed away its voice. It tried to rise then, to coil and rear and strike. But the Sith Lord laid his other hand upon it and broke its power with a single effortless twist.
I am Darth Vader, he repeated,
as he ground the dragon's corpse to dust beneath his mental heel, as he watched the dragon's dust and ashes scatter before the blast from his furnace heart.
And you are nothing at all.
He had become, finally, what they all called him, the hero with no fear. Gatemaster Jurok sprinted through the empty vaulted hallway, clattering echoes of his footsteps, making him sound like a platoon. The main doors of the temple were slowly swinging inward, in answer to the code key punched into the outside lock pad. The gate master had seen him on the monitor. Anakin Skywalker, alone. The huge doors creaked inward. As soon as they were wide enough for the gate master to pass, he slipped through. Anakin stood in the night outside, shoulders hunched, head down against the rain.
Anakin! He gasped, running up to the young man. Anakin, what happened? Where are the masters?
Anakin looked at him, as though he wasn't sure who the gate master was.
Where is Shakti?
In the meditation chambers. We felt something happen in the Force. Something awful. She's searching the Force in deep meditation, trying to get some feel for what's going on.
His words trailed away. Anakin didn't seem to be listening.
Something has happened, hasn't it?
Jurok looked past him now. The night beyond the temple was full of clones. Battalions of them. Brigades. Thousands.
Anakin, he said slowly, what's going on? Something's happened. Something horrible. How bad is it?
The last thing Jurok felt was the emitter of a lightsaber against the soft flesh beneath his jaw. The last thing he heard, as blue plasma chewed upward through his head and burst from the top of his skull and burned away his life, was Anakin Skywalker's melancholy reply.
You have no idea.
Chapter 18, Order 66. Pow City was a cauldron of battle. From his observation post just off the landing ramp of the command lander on the 10th level, Clone Commander Cody swept the sinkhole with his electrobinoculars. The droid control center lay in ruins only a few meters away, but the Separatists had learned the lesson of Naboo. Their next-generation combat droids were equipped with sophisticated self-motivators that kicked in automatically when control signals were cut off, delivering a program of standing orders.
Standing order number one was apparently kill everything that moves. And they were doing a good job of it, too. Half the city was rubble, and the rest was a firestorm of droids and clones and Utapauan dragon cavalry. And just when Commander Cody was thinking how he really wished they had a Jedi or two around right now, several metric tons of dragon mount hurtled from the sky and hit the roof of the command lander hard enough to buckle the deck beneath it. Not that it did the ship any harm. Jadthu-class landers are basically flying bunkers, and this particular one was triple-armored and equipped with internal shock buffers and inertial dampeners powerful enough for a fleet corvette to protect the sophisticated command and control equipment inside. Cody looked up at the dragon mount and at its rider. "General Kenobi," he said. "Glad you could join us."
"Commander Cody," the Jedi Master said with a nod. He was still scanning the battle around them. "Did you contact Coruscant with the news of the general's death?"
The clone commander snapped to attention and delivered a crisp salute.
"As ordered, sir."
Sir. Kenobi looked down at him.
"Are you all right, sir? You're a bit of a mess."
The Jedi Master wiped away some of the dust and gore that smeared his face with the sleeve of his robe, which was charred, and only left a blacker smear across his cheek.
"Ah, well, yes, it has been a stressful day." He waved out at Pow City.
"But we still have a battle to win."
"Then I suppose you'll be wanting this," Cody said,
holding up the lightsaber his men had recovered from a traffic tunnel.
"I believe you dropped it, sir."
Ah, yes.
The weapon floated gently up to Kenobi's hand, and when he smiled down at the clone commander again, Cody could swear the Jedi Master was blushing just a bit.
No need to mention this to, Anakin, is there, Cody?
Cody grinned.
"Is that an order, sir?"
Kenobi shook his head, chuckling tiredly.
"Let's go.
You'll have noticed I did manage to leave a few droids for you."
"Yes, sir."
A silent buzzing vibration came from a compartment concealed within his armor. Cody frowned.
"Go on ahead, General. We'll be right behind you."
That concealed compartment held a secure comlink, which was frequency locked to a channel reserved for the Commander-in-Chief. Kenobi nodded and spoke to his mount, and the great beast overleapt the clone commander on its way down into the battle. Cody withdrew the comlink from his armor and triggered it. A holoscan appeared on the palm of his gauntlet. A hooded man.
"It is time,"
the holoscan said.
"Execute Order 66.
Cody responded as he had been trained since before he'd even awakened in his creche school.
"It will be done, my lord."
The holoscan vanished. Cody stuck the comlink back into its concealed recess and frowned down toward where Kenobi rode his dragon mount into selflessly heroic battle. Cody was a clone. He would execute the order faithfully, without hesitation or regret. But he was also human enough to mutter glumly,
"Would it have been too much to ask for the order to have come through before I gave him back the bloody lightsaber?"
The order is given once. Its wavefront spreads to clone commanders on Kashyyyk and Felucia, Mygeeto, and Telon Roeg. And every battlefront, every military installation, every hospital and rehab center and spaceport cantina in the galaxy. Except for Coruscant. On Coruscant, Order 66 is already being executed. Dawn crept across Galactic City. Fingers of morning brought a rose-colored glow to the wind-smeared upper reach of a vast, twisting cone of smoke. Bail Organa was a man not given to profanity, but when he caught a glimpse of the source of that smoke from the pilot's chair of his speeder, the curse it brought to his lips would have made a Corellian dockhand blush. He stabbed a code that canceled his speeder's programmed route toward the Senate office building, then grabbed the yoke and kicked the craft into a twisting dive that shot him through half a dozen crisscrossing streams of air traffic. He triggered his speeder's comm.
"Antilles!"
The answer from the captain of his personal crew was instant.
Yes, my lord.
Route an alert to SER, he ordered. The Jedi Temple is on fire.
Yes, sir, we know. Senate Emergency Response has announced a state of martial law, and the temple is under lockdown. There's been some kind of Jedi rebellion.
What are you talking about? That's impossible. Why aren't there fire ships on station?
I don't have any details, my lord. We only know what SER is telling us.
Look, I'm right on top of it. I'm going down there to find out what's happening.
My lord, I wouldn't recommend it.
I won't take any chances. Bail hauled the control yoke to slew the speeder toward the broad landing deck on the roof of the Temple Ziggurat. Speaking of not taking chances, Captain, order the duty crew on the Tantive and get her engines warm. I've got a bad feeling about this.
Sir?
Just do it. Bail set the speeder down only a few meters from the deck entrance and hopped out. A squad of clone troopers stood in the open doorway. Smoke billowed out from the hallway behind them. One of the troopers lifted a hand as Bail approached.
Don't worry, sir. Everything is under control here.
Under control? Where are the SER teams? What is the army doing here?
I'm sorry, I can't talk about that, sir.
Has there been some kind of attack on the temple?
I'm sorry, I can't talk about that, sir.
Listen to me, Sergeant. I am a senator of the Galactic Republic, Bail said, improvising. And I am late for a meeting with the Jedi Council.
The Jedi Council is not in session, sir.
Maybe you should let me see for myself. The four clones moved together to block his path.
I'm sorry, sir. Entry is forbidden.
I am a senator.
Yes, sir.
The clone sergeant snapped his DC-15 to his shoulder, and Bail, blinking, found himself staring into its blackened muscle from close enough to kiss it.
And it is time for you to leave, sir.
When you put it that way... Bail backed off, lifting his hands. Yes, all right. I'm going. A burst of blaster fire ripped through the smoke and scattered into the dawn outside. Bail stared with an open mouth as a Jedi flashed out of nowhere and started cutting down clones. No, not a Jedi. A boy. A child. No more than 10 years old. Swinging a lightsaber whose blade was almost as long as he was tall. More blaster fire came from inside, and a whole platoon of clones came pelting toward the landing deck. And the 10-year-old was hit, and hit again, and then just shot to rags among the bodies of the troopers he'd killed. And Bail started backing away faster now. And in the middle of it all, a clone wearing the colors of a commander came out of the smoke and pointed at Bail Organa.
No witnesses,
the commander said.
Kill him.
Bail ran. He dived through a hail of blaster fire, hit the deck, and rolled under his speeder to the opposite side. He grabbed onto its pilot side door and swung his leg onto a tail fin, using the vehicle's body as cover while he stabbed the keys to reinitialize its autorouter. Clones charged toward him, firing as they came. His speeder heeled over and blasted away. Bail pulled himself inside as the speeder curved up into the congested traffic lanes. He was white as flimsy plast, and his hands were shaking so badly he could barely activate his comm. Antilles! Organa to Antilles! Come in, Captain!
Antilles here, my lord.
It's worse than I thought. Far worse than you've heard. Send someone to the spaceport. No, strike that. Go yourself. Take 5 men and go to the spaceport. I know at least 1 Jedi ship is on the ground there. Saisi Tin brought in Sharp Spiral late last night. I need you to steal his homing beacon.
What? His beacon? Why?
No time to explain. Get the beacon and meet me at the Tantive. We're leaving the planet. He stared back at the vast column of smoke that boiled from the Jedi Temple. While we still can. Order 66 is the climax of the Clone Wars, not the end. The Clone Wars will end some few hours from now, when a coded signal, sent by Newt Gunray from the secret separatist bunker on Mustafar, deactivates every combat droid in the galaxy at once. But the climax. It's not a thrilling climax. It's not the culmination of an epic struggle. Just the opposite, in fact.
The Clone Wars were never an epic struggle. They were never intended to be. What is happening right now is why the Clone Wars were fought in the first place. It is their reason for existence. The Clone Wars have always been, in and of themselves, from the very inception, the revenge of the Sith. They were irresistible bait. They took place in remote locations, on planets that belonged primarily to somebody else. They were fought by expendable proxies, and they were constructed as a win-win situation. The Clone Wars were the perfect Jedi trap. By fighting at all, the Jedi lost. With the Jedi Order overextended, spread thin across the galaxy, each Jedi is alone, surrounded only by whatever clone troops he, she, or it commands. War itself pours darkness into the Force, deepening the cloud that limits Jedi perception. And the clones have no malice, no hatred, not the slightest ill intent that might give warning. They are only following orders. In this case, Order 66. Holdout blasters appear in clone hands. ARC-170s drop back onto the tails of Jedi starfighters. AT-STs swivel their guns. Turrets on hover tanks swing silently. Clones open fire, and Jedi die. All across the galaxy, all at once, Jedi die. Kenobi never saw it coming. Cody had coordinated the heavy weapons operators from five different companies, spread over an arc of three different levels of the Sinkhole City. He'd served under Kenobi in more than a dozen operations since the beginning of the Outer Rim sieges, and he had a very clear and unsentimental estimate of just how hard to kill the unassuming Jedi Master was. He wasn't taking any chances. He raised his comlink. Execute. On that order, T-21 muzzles swung, shoulder-fired torps locked on, and proton grenade launchers angled to precisely calibrated elevations. Fire. They did. Kenobi, his dragon mount, and all five of the destroyer droids he'd been fighting vanished in a fireball that for an instant outshone Utapau's sun. Visual polarizers in Cody's helmet cut the glare by 78%. His vision cleared in plenty of time to see shreds of dragon mount and twisted hunks of droid raining into the ocean mouth at the bottom of the sinkhole. Cody scowled and keyed his comlink. Looks like the lizard took the worst of it. Deploy the seekers. All of them. He stared down into the boil of the ocean mouth. I want to see the body. C-3PO paused in the midst of dusting the Tarka Null original on its display pedestal near his mistress's bedroom view wall and used the electrostatic tissue to briefly polish his own photoreceptors. The astromech and the green Jedi starfighter docking with the veranda below. Could that be R2-D2? Well, this should be interesting. Senator Amidala had spent the better part of these pre-dawn hours simply staring over the city toward the plume of smoke that rose from the Jedi Temple. Now at last, she might get some answers. He might too. R2-D2 was far from the sort of sparkling conversationalist with whom C-3PO preferred to associate, but the little astromech had a positive gift for jacking himself into the motherboards of the most volatile situations. The cockpit popped open, and inevitably, the Jedi within was revealed to be Anakin Skywalker. In watching Master Anakin climb down from the starfighter's cockpit, 3PO's photoreceptors captured data that unexpectedly activated his threat aversion subroutines.
Oh,
he said faintly, clutching at his power core.
Oh, I don't like the looks of this at all.
He dropped the electrostatic tissue and shuffled as quickly as he could to the bedroom door.
My lady,
he called to Senator Amidala, where she stood by the broad window.
On the veranda, a Jedi starfighter,
he forced out.
Has docked, my lady.
She blinked, then rushed toward the bedroom door.
C-3PO shuffled along behind her and slipped out through the open door, making a wide circle around the humans who were engaged in one of those inexplicable embraces they seemed so fond of. Reaching the starfighter, he said,
R2, are you all right? What is going on?
The astromech squeaked and beeped. C-3PO's auto-translator interpreted, Nobody tells me anything.
Of course not. You don't keep up your end of the conversation.
A whirring squeal. Something's wrong. The factors don't balance.
You can't possibly be more confused than I am.
You're right. Nobody can be more confused than you are.
Oh, very funny. Hush now. What was that?
The senator was sitting now, leaning distractedly on one of the tasteful, elegant bistro tables that dotted the veranda, while Master Anakin stood above her.
I think he's saying something about a rebellion. That the Jedi have tried to overthrow the Republic. And, oh my goodness, Mace Windu has tried to assassinate Chancellor Palpatine. Can he be serious?
I don't know. Anakin doesn't talk to me anymore. C-3PO shook his cranial assembly helplessly.
How can Master Windu be an assassin? He has such impeccable manners.
Like I told you, the factors don't add up.
I've been hearing the most awful rumors. They're saying the government is going to banish us. Banish droids, can you imagine?
Don't believe everything you hear.
Shh, not so loud.
I'm only saying that we don't know the truth.
Of course we don't.
C-3PO sighed.
And we likely never will.
What about Obi-Wan? She looked stricken, pale and terrified. It made him love her more. He shook his head. Many of the Jedi have been killed. But... She stared out at the rivers of traffic crosshatching the sky. Are you sure? It seems so... unbelievable. I was there, Padme. It's all true. But how could Obi-Wan be involved in something like that? He said, We may never know. Outlawed, she murmured. What happens now? All Jedi are required to surrender themselves immediately, he said. Those who resist are being dealt with. Anakin, they're your family. They're traitors. You're my family. You and the baby. How can all of them be traitors? They're not the only ones. There were senators in this as well. Now, finally, she looked at him, and fear shone from her eyes. He smiled. Don't worry. I won't let anything happen to you. To me? You need to distance yourself from your friends in the Senate, Padme. It's very important to avoid even the appearance of disloyalty. Anakin, you sound like you're threatening me. This is a dangerous time, he said. We are all judged by the company we keep. But I've opposed the war. I opposed Palpatine's emergency powers. I publicly called him a threat to democracy. That's all behind us now. What is? What I've done or democracy? Padme. Her chin came up and her eyes hardened. Am I under suspicion? Palpatine and I have discussed you already. You're in the clear, so long as you avoid inappropriate associations. How am I in the clear? Because you're with me. Because I say you are. She stared at him as if she'd never seen him before. You told him. He knew. Anakin, there's no more need for secrets, Padme. Don't you see? I'm not a Jedi anymore. There aren't any Jedi. There's just me. He reached for her hand. She let him take it. And you, and our child. Then we can go, can't we? Her hard stare melted to naked appeal. We can leave this planet, go somewhere we can be together. Somewhere safe. We'll be together here, he said. You are safe. I have made you safe. Safe, she echoed bitterly, pulling her hand away. As long as Palpatine doesn't change his mind. The hand she had pulled from his grasp was trembling. The Separatist leadership is in hiding on Mustafar. I'm on my way to deal with them right now. Deal with them. The corners of her mouth drew down. Like the Jedi are being dealt with. This is an important mission. I'm going to end the war. She looked away. You're going alone? Have faith, my love, he said. She shook her head helplessly, and a pair of tears spilled from her eyes. He touched them with his mechanical hand. The fingertips of his black glove glistened in the dawn. Two liquid gems, indescribably precious, because they were his. He had earned them. As he had earned her. As he had earned the child she bore. He had paid for them with innocent blood. I love you, he said. This won't take long. Wait for me. Fresh tears streamed onto her ivory cheeks, and she threw herself into his arms. Always, Anakin. Forever. Come back to me, my love. My life. Come back to me. He smiled down on her. You say that like I'm already gone. Icy salt water shocked Obi-Wan back to full consciousness. He hung in absolute blackness. There was no telling how far underwater he might be, nor even which direction might be up. His lungs were choked, half full of water, but he didn't panic or even particularly worry. Mostly, he was vaguely pleased to discover that even in a semi-conscious fall, he'd managed to hang on to his lightsaber. He clipped it back to his belt by feel, and, using only a minor exercise of Jedi discipline to suppress convulsive coughing, he contracted his diaphragm, forcing as much water from his lungs as he could. He took from his equipment belt his rebreather and a small compressed air canister intended for use in an emergency, when the breathable environment was not adequate to sustain his life. Obi-Wan was fairly certain that his current situation qualified as an emergency. He remembered. Boga's wrenching leap, twisting in the air, the shock of impacts, multiple detonations blasting both of them farther and farther out from the sinkhole wall, using her massive body to shield Obi-Wan from his own troops. Boga had known somehow. The Dragon Mount had known what Obi-Wan had been incapable of even suspecting. And without hesitation, she'd given her life to save her rider. I suppose that makes me more than her rider, Obi-Wan thought, as he discarded the canister and got his rebreather snugged into place. I suppose that makes me her friend. It certainly made her mine. He let grief take him for a moment. Grief not for the death of a noble beast, but for how little time Obi-Wan had had to appreciate the gift of his friend's service. But even grief is an attachment, and Obi-Wan let it flow out of his life. Goodbye, my friend. He didn't try to swim. He seemed to be hanging motionless, suspended in infinite night. He relaxed, regulated his breathing, and let the water take him whither it would. C-3PO barely had time to wish his little friend good luck and remind him to stay alert as Master Anakin brushed past him and climbed into the starfighter's cockpit, then fired the engine and blasted off, taking R2-D2 goodness knows where, probably to some preposterously horrible alien planet and into a perfectly ridiculous amount of danger, with never a thought how his loyal droid might feel about being dragged across the galaxy without so much as a by your leave. Really? What had happened to that young man's manners? He turned to Senator Amidala and saw that she was crying.
Is there anything I can do, my lady?
She didn't even turn his way. No thank you, 3PO.
A snack, perhaps?
She shook her head.
A glass of water?
No. All he could do was stand there.
I feel so helpless.
She nodded, looking away again. Up at the fading spark of her husband's starfighter. I know, 3PO, she said. We all do. In the underground shiplift beneath the Senate office building, Bail Organa was scowling as he boarded Tantive IV. When Captain Antilles met him at the top of the landing ramp, Bail nodded backward at the scarlet-clad figures posted around the accessways. Since when do red robes guard Senate ships? Antilles shook his head.
I don't know, sir. I have a feeling there are some senators whom Palpatine doesn't want leaving the planet.
Bail nodded. Thank the Force, I'm not one of them. Yet. Did you get the beacon?
Yes, sir. No one even tried to stop us. The clones at the spaceport seemed confused, like they're not quite sure who's in charge.
That'll change soon. Too soon. We all know who's in charge. Bail said grimly. Prepare to raise ship.
Back to Alderaan, sir?
Bail shook his head. Kashyyyk. There's no way to know if any Jedi have lived through this, but if I had to bet on one, my money'd be on Yoda. Some undefinable time later, Obi-Wan felt his head and shoulders breach the surface of the lightless ocean. He unclipped his lightsaber and raised it over his head. In its blue glow, he could see that he had come up in a large grotto. Holding the lightsaber high, he tucked away his rebreather and side-stroked across the current to a rock outcropping that was rugged enough to offer handholds. He pulled himself out of the water. The walls of the grotto above the waterline were pocked with openings. After inspecting the mouths of several caves, Obi-Wan came upon one where he felt a faint breath of moving air. It had a distinctly unpleasant smell. It reminded him more than a bit of the Dragonmount pen. But when he doused his lightsaber for a moment and listened very closely, he could hear a faint rumble that might have been distant wheels and repulsor lifts passing over sandstone. And what was that? An air horn? Or possibly a very disturbed dragon? At any rate, this seemed to be the appropriate path. He had walked only a few hundred meters before the gloom ahead of him was pierced by the white glare of high-intensity searchlights. He let his blade shrink away and pressed himself into a deep, narrow crack as a pair of seeker droids floated past. Apparently, Cody hadn't given up yet. Their searchlights illuminated and apparently awakened some sort of immense amphibian cousin of a dragon mount. It blinked sleepily at them as it lifted its slickly glistening starfighter-sized head. Oh, Obi-Wan thought. That explains the smell. He breathed into the Force a suggestion that these small bobbing spheroids of circuitry and durasteel were actually, contrary to smell and appearance, some unexpected variety of immortally delicious confection sent down from the heavens by the kindly gods of huge slimy cave monsters. The huge slimy cave monster in question promptly opened jaws that could engulf a bantha and snapped one of the seekers from the air, chewing it to slivers with every evidence of satisfaction. The second seeker emitted a startled and thoroughly alarmed weep, 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 and shot away into the darkness with the creature in hot pursuit. Reigniting his lightsaber and moving cautiously back out into the cavern, Obi-Wan came upon a nest of what must have been infant huge slimy cave monsters. Picking his way around it as they lunged and snapped and squalled at him, he reflected absently that people who thought all babies were cute should really get out more. Obi-Wan walked and occasionally climbed or slid or had to leap and walked some more. Soon the darkness in the cavern gave way to the pale glow of Utapauan traffic lighting, and Obi-Wan found himself standing in a smallish side tunnel off a major thoroughfare. This was clearly little traveled, though. The sandy dust on its floor was so thick it was practically a beach. In fact, he could clearly see the tracks of the last vehicle to pass this way. Broad parallel tracks pocked with divots. A blade wheeler. And beside them stretched long, splay-clawed prints of a running dragon. Obi-Wan blinked in mild astonishment. He had never entirely grown accustomed to the way the Force always came through for him, but neither was he reluctant to accept its gifts. Frowning thoughtfully, he followed the tracks a short distance around a curve until the tunnel gave way to the small landing platform.
Grievous's starfighter was still there, as were the remains of Grievous. Apparently, not even the local rock vultures could stomach him.
10T4 swept through the Kashyyyk system on silent running. This was still a combat zone. Captain Antilles wouldn't even risk standard scans, because they could so easily be detected and backtraced by Separatist forces. And the Separatists weren't the only ones Antilles was worried about.
There's the signal again, sir. Whoops. Wait, I'll get it back.
Antilles fiddled some more with the controls on the beacon. Blasted thing, he muttered.
What, you can't calibrate it without using the Force?
Bale stared through the forward view wall. Kashyyyk was only a tiny green disk, 200,000 kilometers away.
Do you have a vector?
Roughly, sir. It seems to be on an orbital tangent headed out system. I think we can risk a scan. Tight beam.
Very well, sir.
Antilles gave the necessary orders, and moments later, the scan tech reported that the object they'd picked up seemed to be some sort of escape pod.
It's not a Republic model, sir. Wait, here comes the database.
The scan tech frowned at its screen.
It's Wookiee, sir. That doesn't make any sense. Why would a Wookiee escape pod be outbound from Kashyyyk?
Interesting. Bale didn't yet allow himself to hope. Life signs?
Yes. Well, maybe. This reading doesn't make any...
The scan tech could only shrug.
I'm not sure, sir. Whatever it is, it's no Wookiee, that's for sure.
For the first time all day, Bail Organa allowed himself to smile.
Captain Antilles?
The captain saluted crisply.
On our way, sir.
Obi-Wan took General Grievous's starfighter screaming out of the atmosphere so fast, he popped the gravity well and made jump before the Vigilance could even scramble its fighters. He reverted to real space well beyond the system, kicked the starfighter to a new vector, and jumped again. A few more jumps of random direction and duration left him deep in interstellar space.
You know, he said to himself, integral hyperspace capability is rather useful in a starfighter. Why don't we have it yet?
While the starfighter's nav system whirred and chunked its way through recalculating his position, he punched codes to gang his Jedi comlink into the starfighter's system. Instead of a holoscan, the comlink generated an audio signal, an accelerating series of beeps. Obi-Wan knew that signal. Every Jedi did. It was the recall code. It was being broadcast on every channel by every holonet repeater. It was supposed to mean that the war was over. It was supposed to mean that the Council had ordered all Jedi to return to the temple immediately. Obi-Wan suspected it actually meant what had happened on Utapau was far from an isolated incident. He keyed the comlink for audio. He took a deep breath.
Emergency code 913, he said. And waited.
The starfighter's comm system cycled through every response frequency. He waited some more.
Emergency code 913. This is Obi-Wan Kenobi. Repeat. Emergency code 913. Are there any Jedi out there?
He waited. His heart thumped heavily. Any Jedi, please respond. This is Obi-Wan Kenobi declaring a 913 emergency. He tried to ignore the small, still voice inside his head that whispered he might just be the only one out here. He might just be the only one, period. He started punching coordinates for a single jump that would bring him close enough to pick up a signal directly from Coruscant, when a burst of fuzz came over his comlink. A quick glance confirmed the frequency. A Jedi channel.
Please repeat, Obi-Wan said. I'm locking onto your signal. Please repeat.
The fuzz became a spray of blue laser, which gradually resolved into a fuzzy figure of a tall, slim human with dark hair and an elegant goatee.
Master Kenobi, are you all right? Have you been wounded?
Senator Organa, Obi-Wan exclaimed with profound relief.
No, I'm not wounded, but I'm certainly not all right.
I need help. My clones turned on me. I barely escaped with my life.
There have been ambushes all over the galaxy.
Obi-Wan lowered his head, offering a silent wish to the Force that the victims might find peace within it. Have you had contact with any other survivors?
Only one,
the Alderaanian senator said grimly.
Lock onto my coordinates. He's waiting for you.
A curve of knuckle, skinned black scab, corrugated with dirt and leaking red. The fringe of fray at the cuff of a beige sleeve, dark, crusted with splatter from the death of a general. The tawny swirl of grain and wine-dark tabletop of polished Alderaanian crin. These were what Obi-Wan Kenobi could look at without starting to shake. The walls of the small conference room on Tantive IV were too featureless to hold his attention. To look at a wall allowed his mind to wander, and the shaking began. The shaking got worse when he met the ancient green stare of the tiny alien seated across the table from him. For that wrinkled leather skin and those tufts of withered hair were his earliest memory, and they reminded Obi-Wan of the friends who had died today. The shaking got worse still when he turned to the other being in the room, because he wore politician's robes that reminded Obi-Wan of the enemy who yet lived. The deception. The death of Jedi masters he had admired, of Jedi knights who had been his friends. The death of his oath to Qui-Gon. The death of Anakin. Anakin must have fallen along with Mace and Ajin, Saeci and Kit. Fallen along with the temple. Along with the Order itself. Ashes. Ashes and dust. 25,000 years wiped from existence in a single day. All the dreams, all the promises, all the children. We took them from their homes. Obi-Wan fought to stay in his chair. The pain inside him demanded motion. It became wave after wave of tremors. We promised their families.
Control yourself, you must. Still Jedi you are.
Yes, Master Yoda. That scab on his knuckle. Focused on that, he could suppress the shaking. Yes, we are Jedi. But what if we're the last?
If the last we are, unchanged our duty is.
Yoda settled his chin onto hands folded over the head of his gimmer stick. He looked every day of his nearly 900 years.
While one Jedi lives, survive the Order does. Resist the darkness with every breath we must.
He lifted his head, and the stick angled to poke Obi-Wan in the shin.
Especially the darkness in ourselves, young one. Of the dark side, despair is.
The simple truth of this called to him. Even despair is attachment. It is a grip clenched upon pain. Slowly, very slowly, Obi-Wan Kenobi remembered what it was to be a Jedi. He leaned back in his chair and covered his face with both hands, inhaling a thin stream of air between his palms. Into himself with the air, he brought pain and